Packers fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast from PackersNews.com and JS Online. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. Guys, we are back in the building. And in fact, we've been here all week. It's been the first week of Packers training camp, a good four straight days out on the field. And I know that no pads have been put on yet, so it's not real football, but it felt good to be back out there and seeing things flying and hearing them hit at least a little bit, right?
No. Didn't feel good at all. Didn't feel good to me.
It felt good on the inside. It was hot on the outside.
I know it's training camp because I don't know what day it is. It takes some time to get used to standing out there watching after being on vacation for so long. But it's inevitable, and I think it was, you know, it was one of these camps where nothing was hanging over it. Nothing is hanging over it. No Aaron Rodgers or, you know, some kind of contract or whatever it is, COVID, you know. It's kind of back to a normal training camp.
You know, I wrote about in just the opening days of this camp that it's shaping up to have the makings to be. We'll see if it plays out this way, but it had the makings to be the most competitive camp since I joined the beat in 2014 because – and, you know, competition and intensity are kind of cliches that you like to, you know, that coaches like to throw out this time of year. But really, in the past, it's really just been cliche because you've had a loaded offense versus a defense that was overmatched and trying to figure things out early in camp. It's not that way with this team. This team is really inverted. I mean, throughout Aaron Rodgers' career, he's had an established number one receiver. He's had questions. And now you got a defense in the Packers that have Pro Bowlers at every level, and you've got a lot of questions at offensive line and receiver. So in terms of competition, this is a defense that actually has a fighting chance this month. You know, they can be competitive in a way that they haven't been able to be for much of my time. I joined the beat in 2014. So I think you're going to see that a lot, and I think we've seen that a lot already. Today was a good example, right? Because in the move the ball period, the offense had a pair of three and outs, and then they went down and had a touchdown in the 2 minute period. And it's gone back and forth. And I think it's going to be a very competitive camp. But yeah, as far as how it feels, man, my eyes are glazed over. This day four, and it's hot out there. This was the hottest day too. This Saturday practice is the hottest day that they've had so far. It's a grind.
Yes, it is a grind, and the grind is only getting started, as Spoon said, not even really sure what day it is. But as far as that competition goes, let's talk about that a little bit, because already this defense is getting lauded. I heard a couple of talking heads say yesterday on a show, the best defense in the league is going to be the Packers. We haven't even played a preseason game yet. So when we see some of these guys like Alan Lazard or Romeo Doubs go up and make some of these acrobatic 50-50 catches against Eric Stokes, against Jaire Alexander, are we putting too much on this defense and therefore being overly impressed with this receiver group so far? Or is this defense really as good as everybody wants it to be and therefore – with what they have done this week in essentially glorified 7-on-7, with what they have done this week, should we be a little bit more impressed with this receiving core than we were planning on being after Davante Adams' departure?
No, we shouldn't. Everything happens in a vacuum in training camp. It's not, you can see guys develop. It's more about individuals than it is about units. And then the unit, as the individuals start to come forward, and, you know, in the last week, then they start to become more of a unit and you get a better idea for how they're going to be, unless they're just an established veteran unit. And we don't see that anymore because of free agency. You just don't have like a Chicago Bears of the 80s or you know, just really Tampa Bay, Baltimore Ravens defense where they kept guys together for a while. So what we're seeing are just individual plays, and I think the focus should be on individuals, and then we'll know more once they start to play as a unit. And again, they haven't even put on any pads. I mean, you could write a story that Eric Stokes stinks because he gave up three, you know, he's given up like three touchdowns in the past week. Well, yeah, I mean, it was just individual plays, and we'll see what happens when they put pads on and there's game planning and things like that. So a lot of stuff changes.
Speaking of individual players and individual plays, I don't know if any one player has benefited more from this first week of training camp than Romeo Doubs. I saw a fan on Twitter the other day posted a screenshot. He had put down odds for him to win Rookie of the Year after the first day of camp. I think that's just a fan having fun. But, Ryan, with what we have seen from Romeo thus far, again, we have to add that caveat, no pads on yet. How excited should fans be about this kid, this rookie?
Well, you try not to make any definitive declarative statements in the first week of camp or really any time before you put the pads on. He's made some nice catches. He's shown some ball skills, some ability to attack the football and win contested catches in the air. He had a catch down the deep left sideline over Kavion Into. He had a really impressive back shoulder catch over Eric Stokes, so one of those touchdowns that Eric Stokes gave up against Aaron Rodgers. And that's important. Even without the pads, that's important to be able to attack the football and make contested catches. But the game at this level, it's won and lost at the line of scrimmage, not just for the lines, but especially for the receivers and DBs too. I mean, when you put the pads on, you're getting jammed, which throws off your timing. You have to fight through that to stay on rhythm within the timing of the passing game, in and out of your routes, and that's where plays are won and lost. So we haven't seen that yet, and until we do, you know, Romeo Doubs is certainly high on my list of guys that I'm really looking forward to seeing when the pads come on and seeing how he makes that transition, because that's really where the transition is. This guy's been catching balls all of his life. How does he fare against press man coverage against elite NFL corners? And he's going to get that when the pads come on against a Jaire Alexander.
Yeah, and what we've seen is competitive. So that's what you want to see, guys in competitive situations. And so instead of, you know, the OTAs where hardly anyone's – these have been real competitive situations. Even though they're not wearing pads, you kind of get a sense of how a guy will compete when the ball is – in his area. And so this guy attacks the ball. That's what we know about him so far, is that he's got a really long reach. He looks like he has the potential to be a good red zone target. And then we'll see after that. We'll see if he has enough speed to get open, you know, all those things. But I always, the first thing I look for is how is a guy perform in a competitive situation.
I asked Randall Cobb on Friday, what specifically are the pieces that Romeo has that make him special? Like, we can say, like, oh, he's you know, competitive, or he can go out there and he'll give it his all. But what specifically is it that he does that makes him worth watching? And he said his ability to go up on 50-50 balls. And that kind of does stem from competitiveness, because you have to just be willing to beat the other guy. But he said what he can do on 50-50 balls is really what's going to make him special, which, to your point, could make him an interesting red zone target.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, because that's what Davante Adams did in college. That's all they did. They threw competitive balls to him. They threw lobs, and, you know, he would just outjump everybody. And then it turned out, well, he had all this other kind of skill too. Now, I'm definitely not comparing him to Doubs.
That's what I heard you say, Spoon. That's what I'm saying.
But there's something to the ability to compete on a jump ball, and, you know, you have the skills and ability to outjump on Eric Stokes, who's a heck of a athlete.
But what was that skill that we found out about Davante Adams that he had too? The best press man release package in the NFL.
Yeah.
And that is the start of the route is everything, because you don't start well, you're not in position to make the play. So that's going to be with Romeo Doubs. Yes, he can go up and get it, but that's going to be where he separates himself or doesn't. Once the pads come on, Can he get off the line of scrimmage? Can he beat press man? Because he's going to find it.
And it's funny you mentioned that, because I was focusing on him. It just happened to be one play, and Jaire Alexander was playing off him. And then at the last second, Jair Alexander came right up on him. And I thought Dobbs made just a great move off the line of scrimmage. But within just like that, you know, Alexander may have gotten beat for a second or a half second. He was right back in him. You know, it's like that's how the difference in the NFL, like in the college, that might have gotten him wide open. But in this case, you know, Jair Alexander reacted so quickly after that, all of a sudden he was right back on him.
It's also the difference between Jair Alexander and most NFL corners too, yeah, right? Because if he has a false step, he can ease right back on it, where you don't always see that. But yeah, I mean, it's just much more physical. It's much more physical at this level than what these guys face in college.
Speaking of Jair Alexander, we watched the corners a lot this week, and it seemed that there was a concerted effort to put Ja, Eric Stokes, and Rasul Douglas on the field together as much as possible. And there were times that they took Ja off and they moved Rasul to the outside and put Gene Charles in the slot. But it seemed like they stayed in that nickel formation a lot more than they had in the past for that trio. That is something you can kind of see without pads. Guys, and Ryan, I'll start with you. I mean, how important is it to just have all three of those guys on the field together as much as you can get them?
Well, you know, you want your best 11 on the field. And when you break it down in corner, you want your best three corners on the field when you're a nickel. And we've talked about it all offseason. Not one of these guys is a natural tailor-made slot corner. I mean, even Jair Alexander, who's the most physically, you know, tailored to that, he's also a lockdown, shut down half the field perimeter corner. That's his game. So, yeah, they're going to want to do that as much as possible, because if you get your best three corners on the field, so one of those guys has got to play slot, and that's been Rasul Douglas among that trio more times than not. And I think in the season you're going to see that be more of a week-to-week matchup depending on who the other slot receiver is. And, you know, Spoon, we were walking in from practice the other day, and you were making the point about Minnesota. Yeah, it's probably going to be Jair Alexander, because when they get – to week one, it's Justin Jefferson. I don't know that they're going to have Rasul Douglas in the slot against Justin Jefferson. That's a Jair Alexander matchup. So I think as camp progresses and they get out of this install phase that they're in now, and they get into more of the game planning, they're going off cards for week one, you're probably going to see Jair Alexander in the slot more. But we know at this point that Rasul Douglas is going to be playing a lot of slot.
Yeah, and you know the interesting part, and this we won't know until the season starts, is – you know, Joe Barry is known for playing a lot of zone coverage. And, you know, now that they've got Quay Walker, you know, and can pair him with Devondre Campbell, they can play nickel and spread everybody out. And then Rasul Douglas just becomes another safety. You know, he's just – it's everybody drops back and then everybody rallies to the ball. Like, you know, the old Tampa Bay defense, that's what they did. They played zone and everybody rallied to the ball. 49ers, same way. So I'm sure Barry will have ways to not get Douglas isolated one-on-one. I mean, there's times he's going to have to. He just will have to. But I can see them, Barry, like the wheels turning, that maybe Douglas is like a third safety.
And that's the benefit, I think, of having Rasul Douglas. As soon as we saw it this offseason, him in the slot, the thing that clicked in my mind was he's a bigger body, closer to the line of scrimmage, closer to the ball, which is run support, which is a big part of the job responsibility of your slot receivers, mm-hmm. to be available and responsible for run support. And Rasul Douglas is built like a safety. So he doesn't have, you know, those quicker slot receivers with the two-way go, he might not have the lateral speed to match up with those guys. But if you don't have a Justin Jefferson across the line of scrimmage, having that bigger body closer to the ball in Rasul Douglas, that's a big benefit for the defense as a whole.
That's an interesting point, because I actually asked Rasul Douglas about it on Thursday, and he said, you know, if we're in run, I'll probably come off the field. But maybe as the install goes on and they see what they can do with him, we'll see him out there more and more, again, just to kind of keep all three of them out there as much as possible. There was one play today, on Saturday even, where I believe that they put all 11 on short yardage on 3rd and 3, and then Rodgers tried to go over the top. Do we think that with the defense that Joe Barry has this year, he'll try to be more aggressive, more physical?
It's not his MO to blitz a ton. It's just not what he does. I think he'll blitz Walker and Campbell a lot. I think that's a combination of guys who he can use. You know, and he likes to stand up Gary and put him in the middle and spread out Kenny Clark on, you know, in their dime and move guys, try to get advantages. But I don't see him being like a really all-out blitzer. That's not what we've seen from him.
Yeah, maybe the inside backers, because Devondre Campbell blitzed quite a bit last year. And, you know, it's interesting with Quay Walker, his first position when he made the transition from basketball to football was receiver, and his second position, his first defensive position, was actually outside linebacker. And he came off the edge in high school. So he has some of that in his background, and then he was used that way in Georgia as well as a off-ball guy that could get after the quarterback. So that's part of what, you know, we know with those two, they're true inside linebackers, so they're kind of built like thumpers in the run game. They've got the athleticism to be able to cover on the back end in the second level. But they also do have some blitz ability as well.
Speaking of Rashawn Gary, if he was allowed to hit Aaron Rodgers this week, he may have been in double digits in sacks. He just seemed to be all over the place. And he's a little bit thinner. I asked him if he had lost any weight, and he said, I lost a decent bit of body fat percentage. So he does look like he's slimmed up. Again, no pads, but how scary can he be? And what do you want to see when the pads do come on to see if his speed this week can transition to the game, if that makes sense? Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I think that he's been really quick. I asked Matt LaFleur, how do you evaluate pass rush without these guys having pads on? Because that's obviously, I mean, the closer you get to the football, the more the physicality of the game ratchets up. And one of the things that they can't do right now is bull rush, which is a big part of Rashawn Gary's game. He's got a very explosive, powerful, you know, the speed to power on the bull is something we've seen from him, that he can't do that. But he's just been winning on speed moves. You know, he hasn't even been power yet because there's no pads. I think it's a surprise to no one that Rashawn Gary's had a good start to this camp. He's a guy that with his body of work last year, you can have a lot of confidence in that he's you know, primed for a big year. I thought, you know, when I went through the postseason grades, I thought he was their best defensive player last year. I mean, it's either him or Kenny Clark, but I'd probably edge toward Rashawn Gary as being their top defensive player last year. And if he can build off that, it sure looks like he's had a good start in doing that in camp early on. It's huge for this defense because not a lot behind him at edge rush. It's a very thin position.
Mm-hmm. I want to see him advance with pass rush moves. I want to see him more sophisticated with his pass rush moves. He's conquered the bull rush. He's immensely strong. And now you have to figure out how to set that strength up, get that offensive lineman to, you know, set to accept the strength and then get around him. And so I think that's the next step for him as a pass rusher.
I asked him on Friday if he had added a swim move or anything, and he said, I can't tell you that. And so
he'll show it soon enough.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm like, this is not going to be a secret in long. But it was funny. We'll let him have his secrets until he shows us something new. Guys, Matt LaFleur made the comment Saturday morning when it came to special teams. I'm sure y'all have seen the difference. Have you seen a difference this week? Mm-hmm. Just in terms of energy and heart, I don't know.
No, frankly, I haven't. I mean, to me, it's just been special teams. I haven't seen anything different. I would say that maybe they're a little more organized, I think. I think that's probably been the key to it. Like, they don't do very many of the things over again. They don't have to redo anything. I will say I did see a funny story, or I encountered a funny story. I happened to be walking in the locker room, and I'm sorry, I can't pronounce his name. We just were talking about that earlier. Engabari.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's talking to Rich Bisaccia, and he's explaining how he screwed something up, and he's going in depth, and then Bisaccia goes, I don't accept that explanation. Let's go look at it in film. And so it was like, you know, he's just like, no nonsense. I don't know what you're talking about is basically what he said, and then we'll look at it on film.
He is no nonsense, and he showed that today with Amari Rodgers, who fair caught a punt, yeah. Who had the audacity to fair catch a punt.
He's practice, right?
Yeah, and he just, I don't want no bleeping fair catch. He was very demanding of make a play, which I think is interesting because what's been kind of the mindset of the special teams for a long time
now?
Don't
screw up.
Do no wrong.
Right.
Right? But that's not really the way that you can operate on the football field and thrive. It's not don't screw up. It's make a play. You got to be aggressive and forward-thinking and not defensive in the way that you attack each snap. And there's been a lot of reactive special teams play. Don't screw up. Do no wrong. And that idea, that philosophy, make a play. Don't just fair catch the ball. Yeah. Make something happen with it. To be in his face about that, I thought was very interesting. And Spoon, to you know, the word that, in terms of a change, the word that did come to my mind was an organization.
Yeah.
The big thing, just how it's organized, the structure of the special teams, drills and practices, only having two field goals attempted at one time instead of having it bleed out seven or eight in a row,
yeah.
Which never happens in a game. Well, if you want to practice the way that the game is played, there's never a point in the game where you have seven, eight straight field goals. It's
right.
You might have two, but you're never going to have more than two field goals in a row, so why practice that? And that's the change that Rich Bisaccia made day one this offseason. The structure in the organization of how the special teams practices are conducted, that I have noticed has changed.
Yeah, I don't want to give away the entire story, but I talked with Dallin Leavitt, who was a Raider last year, and the Packers picked him up. He got cut on July 20th, and the Packers picked him up right away, and he was a core special teams guy for Bisaccia. And day one, he's with the number ones in every single core. In fact, he was the guy, the fullback in the punt today, in punt coverage. So he was calling all the signals. And it was really interesting what he was saying about Bisaccia's philosophy. And it's not try to outthink everybody. It's be really good in coverage. Coverage is everything, and his foundation for everything is punt coverage. Like, that's everything there, because it incorporates all the things you do on special teams. It's blocking, it's transition, it's coverage, you know, it's the kicking game. And he just demands that everything be perfect on those. And yeah, I think that's where we're going to see a big difference.
I think that Packers fans will be happy to hear that maybe they're going to tidy up that punt. If you might have longer memories than a few months, you know, how last season ended, I think that'll be open music to Packers fans' ears.
I mentioned that to Leavitt. I've said he was telling me this, and I said, well, you know what happened in the playoff game, right? And he was like, yeah, I heard. You know, so
too soon.
Yeah.
Guys, let's talk ACLs. Because the Packers are dealing with a ton of them. But that being said, Kylan Hill and Robert Tonyan both look like they're just flying through their rehab. If you remember, those two tore their ACL on the exact same day versus the Cardinals last year. They've been step by step with each other through the rehab process. They compete in the rehab process to see who can hit a marker before the other. Both of them today, I noticed at different times, were out there running routes. Or a watered down version of a route, just to kind of test their cutting and things like that. So, how soon do you need them back? And then, of course, David Bakhtiari as well, who revealed this week that he suffered a setback after the Detroit Lions game. He was out there on Saturday doing very, very light rehab work, but it's the first time we've seen him moving on the field this offseason.
Yeah, I believe that he'll. Tonyan and Bakhtiari and Elton Jenkins will all be on PUP when the season starts. The Packers are so steadfast in demanding that the ACL heal for 10 months. I mean, that's like Pat McKenzie's mark. He's like, he doesn't, he, if you just go back and look, he just doesn't want to put anybody on the field because he feels like it takes 10 months to heal. Now, you know, maybe Elgton Jenkins, who's a just unbelievable athlete, could get away with it less, but I just think they'll be on PUP, and with PUP being adjusted now that it's only, you only have to sit the first 4 weeks, I think it's a slam dunk that that'll happen.
And that's 10 months to practice, right? Not to play, but to practice.
To do football stuff.
Right.
Yep.
And why that's significant is on or about October 28th was when Kylin Hill and Robert Tonyan had their ACLs. Well, what's 10 months from that? That's August 28th, right? That's the end of camp when you're talking about them practicing.
Right. For the first time, yeah.
And so then you need a few weeks if you haven't done anything in a year, football activity. You need a few weeks to get into football shape because we always talk. There's conditioned, there's in shape, and then there's football shape.
Yeah.
PUP is 4 weeks. That's the window, right? So if they can't get back until that 10-month mark at the end of camp, then you have a few weeks. It seems the writing's on the wall that those guys are going to start
those. But Bakhtiari, we just don't know. That's a mystery.
He's the wild card.
Because the ACL is, according to him, is healed. It's not the ACL. It's the other stuff he suffered, which was meniscus and
cartilage.
That is meniscus. What was the other he had? Anyway, whatever it was.
We'll look it up.
It just... We don't know. We don't know. What is he going to have fluid in there again?
And we don't know if that's all it was, too. We don't even, right. It could be broader than that. I mean, this guy's knee was shredded, right? I mean, it's very clear that it was far beyond the ACL and even the minute. There could be other stuff that we don't even know, complications along with that injury, that twist of the knee on New Year's Eve of 2020. I don't think we even know the full broad scope of what exactly he's gone through.
Or what the, you know, play on words, but what the scope was, what they actually did. I was talking to Mason Crosby about, he had a scope, and he's on PUP, and he's like, well, they went in there and they tightened my ligaments. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. How do you do that? And he said it took 15 minutes. You know, he went in and got it scoped. And he said it's from repetitive, you know. I was asking him or joking with him, like, how many times have you swung your foot in the course of your life? And it's just repetitive, you know, damage in there. And he got it fixed. And I also wonder if that was subconsciously had anything to do with him last year.
You know, a good example of how one injured play can have multiple injuries that present multiple timelines is Randy Ramsey. Mm-hmm. Because we said for a long time it was an ankle, but he's back at practice for the first time in almost a year, and he said that it wasn't just the ankle, he also broke his fibula. And breaking his fibula was an 8-week thing. The fibula was fine in 8 weeks. So that was, after 2 months, that was fine. But the two ankle ligaments that he tore took 10 months.
Yeah.
That was to get those stable again and not an issue and have the same explosive force in that ankle that he had in his right ankle that wasn't injured. That the ligaments took 10 months. The broken fibula took 2 months. So when you're talking about a David Bakhtiari who had multiple injuries in the same play, that's multiple timelines. It's not just a one linear, it's an ACL, and that's 9 to 12. There's multiple timelines there because there's multiple injuries.
Yep.
And Matt LaFleur told us he does not believe in timelines anymore or trust in timelines.
Good for him.
Exactly.
Don't blame him because every person's different.
For what it's worth, Robert Tonyan did tell reporters the other day that, like, he said, I'm not committing to a timeline, and he said, but, you know, I think I could be ready for the season opener. That may be in his mind. Flea, the other guys may have something completely different in mind.
You know what I think they do is they tell them, you know, yeah, you might be ready for 10 months. And, you know, to keep them really motivated to get going. I don't know this for a fact. I'm guessing. But, you know, maybe they say, yeah, yeah, maybe you could come back. And then when it gets to the time, it's like, well, you better wait till 10 months.
Give it another week.
Yeah.
Well,
and for those of us with kids, sometimes the less they know, the better, right?
Right.
So it's just, it's best to just kind of avoid the drama of telling a guy early on, no, you're not going to do this. Let him hope. But you're the parent. You still know that, you know, this is the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
But you don't. It's just not worth getting into all the way.
Right.
It's the hope that'll kill you. Speaking of knees, let's touch on Christian Watson real quick. He told us this week that he needed to get his knee cleaned out a little. That it just didn't feel right after OTAs. Wanted to be better safe than sorry, and go ahead and get it taken care of. At what point, though, does it become a concern that he had not been on the field yet with Aaron Rodgers, other than those 2 days in minicamp?
I think it's a concern today.
Yep.
I think it was a concern on Wednesday. He needs to be out there. And, I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. He made a decision that probably was the right one. Rather than go through the season less than 100%, he took care of something that was nagging him, and I think that was a smart move. But you can't take away from the fact that it's going to affect him.
Guys, we get tomorrow off, Sunday off. I think that by the time this podcast is posted, we will be back here in Lambeau Field for the next day of practice.
Probably, yeah.
But I hope you enjoy your day off, and then shells go on Monday, full pads on Tuesday. Does it feel like that's when everything really starts?
I think so, and you know it's going to be very, you know, a couple of names in my head that I'm looking forward to. And we talked about Romeo Doubs, but you know I think Rico Gafford's made a couple plays in coverage as a guy that, you know, he's also been returning kicks, but yeah. I think in their 2 minute drill today he forced two incompletions in a three and out. He'll be kind of a bottom of the roster guy that I'm looking forward to.
And he's running second team right now with Jean Charles. Is it him and then like Ento is third team. You know, now we'll see when Keyshawn Nixon comes back where he fits in. But you're right about Gafford, and the place to watch him is special teams too. You know, you can't. Guys who run 4.27s don't fall out of the trees.
And he can he's physical.
4.27?
Yeah, he's, or something like that.
He's physical. He attacks coverage. You know, so that's does that carry over to pads? And you know, we haven't mentioned him, but I have thought that Jordan Love has had a few promising days. I've thought that he's looked like a more confident guy, more confident than I've seen the past 2 years. He's let it rip more. He's stood and fired each day. He's stood in the pocket and fired. He's been more comfortable flushing from the pocket than what we've seen. The big question when it's against someone else and when it's live, and I know that we're still a couple weeks away from that, but that's the other one that I want to see if, you know, if my eyes are deceiving me here, or if he's able, because in when it's against someone else and it's live, I mean, you got to feel the rush. You got to read defenses before the snap. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that comes into just, you know, other than just rifling the ball. But we have seen him do that, and he has looked more confident. I'll be very, very intrigued to see what it looks like once preseason starts.
Yeah, and what I want to see from him, you're right, he does look better. He looks more in command. But the two-minute drill today, so he's three and out. One of his passes gets bad at a line of scrimmage, but then it's third and 10. And the difference between him and Aaron Rodgers is just playing the sticks the whole way. It's third and five. He's going for a play that's going to get him 6 yards. You know, he's keeping the chains moving, where Love got in a position where he threw a nice pass to Amari Rodgers across the middle on third and 10, but you know, it leaves too much open there for something to happen because it's 10 yards down the field or 12 or 15, whatever it was. And the play didn't happen. I don't know if Rodgers dropped it or if Gafford got a hand on it.
I think it was a PBU for Gafford.
Right.
But
then I'm watching, and it occurred to me, I'm watching Rodgers, and every time it was second and six, he's hitting a 7 yard pass and moving the chains. Now, he gets a do-over on, I don't know, on the play. the 2 minute ended with Rodgers throwing an interception to Jean Charles. And then all of a sudden they're saying, oh, Jean Charles is out of bounds when he caught it. And I'm like, it didn't look like it to me,
but I was far away.
I was away.
I didn't think so either, but yeah, we didn't have a great – it was the opposite side of the field from where you and I were standing, Spoon, so I didn't have a great look at the boundary line, but it looked like a pick.
I think he got Aaron Rodgers, you know.
And it was a throw that that Rodgers and Cobb have connected on a lot of times over the years, like one of those outside shoulder sideline, only Cobb can get it, and Jean Charles just got his shoulder in there and bodied Cobb up.
Yeah, it was a slant and go and into the corner. And then he throws it again to Lazard, and this time Lazard jumps over Eric Stokes for the touchdown. So who knows? But you know, the beauty of watching Aaron Rodgers in a 2 minute is how much command he has of the situation.
Mm-hmm. So you never
what Jordan Love needs to get.
You never go broke taking a profit. And that's what Jordan Love needs to remember.
Right, right.
Yeah. Well, guys, we will be back here next week. And for those listening, stick with us. We will have continued coverage of the Packers training camp as they kick off week 2 and put on the pads. So stay tuned to PackersNews.com for full coverage of Packers training camp. This has been the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.